Welcome to the Let Good Things In show. I'm your host, Amanda Acker. I am so happy you are here. At the Let Good Things In show, we talk all about second chances, resiliency, following your intuition, and even music. Listen to hear stories of hope and to be inspired. Remember, you are stronger than you think. Let's dive in. Hi, my amazing humans. Thank you so much for tuning in today to Season 2, Episode 3 of the interview series. My guest today is Tracy Brinkman. From hitting rock bottom of drugs, divorce, bankruptcy, and even the death of an 18-month-old daughter, to running the planning and marketing departments of some of corporate America's finest companies, to his own company helping driven entrepreneurs scale their businesses by crystallizing and monetizing their passions, and now hosting his podcast focused on driven dark horse entrepreneurs. Tracy Brinkman is a business coach, success coach, podcast host, and product creator that realizes life isn't fair and participation awards do not feed your family or your drive to succeed. This driven dark horse entrepreneur is looking to share all that he has learned and is still learning about starting, restarting, kickstarting, and stepping up your entrepreneurial game, all while not ignoring that amazing tool between your ears. Wow, what a bio. And let me tell you, whenever I listen back to this episode, because now I do this thing where I listen before editing to see where things might need to be edited, but Tracy nailed it. He's an amazing speaker, and what he shares with us today is really going to inspire you to keep moving towards your goals. So let's dive in. Hi, Tracy. Thank you so much for being here.
Oh, it's my pleasure, Amanda. Thank you so much for having me aboard.
Yeah, sure. So to start things off, could you just tell us some of your story, like where you came from?
Oh, my goodness. Well, you may have to rein me in anytime here because I can talk your ear off. Let's start there. But I'll give you the Reader's Digest condensed version, and then we can drill around wherever you'd like to.
Perfect.
I'm going to go way back, but I'll push forward fast.
Okay.
I was lucky enough to be an Army brat, right? My dad served 23 years in the military. And the reason that's important to me is because I got to move all over the United States and actually live over in Germany, probably about 6 years of my youth.
Oh, wow.
Which is a part of my heritage. My grandparents are German. They immigrated over here during World War II. And so I got to see a lot more than I think the normal person back in the 60s, 70s, and 80s would have seen, because right. I was traveling the world, literally.
Yeah.
And it also fostered in me this ability to network, right? Make friends with people, connect with people faster, because I was doing it every couple of years when we moved.
That's
probably the only reason why I even mentioned it, but it also plays into later parts of the story, right? My dad decided to retire. I was probably just hitting my teens, and I went from this, it wasn't really super disciplined, but it was very structured life. Mm-hmm. Two, he settled in Southern California.
Oh, so that's different.
I went from structure and a fair amount of discipline to probably the most liberal place on the planet, let alone in the United States, right?
Yeah.
And right as I'm hitting my teens. So I'm going to be testing the limits of things anyway.
Right.
And so that got me hooked up probably with some folks I didn't need to. And I think a big piece of it for me was the scholastic part of it, right? I was always good in school. I was always very engaged. And we get out there, and the school that I was a part of was probably 2 or 3 years behind the teachings I had already learned. I literally remember going home to my mom and dad saying, I learned this like 2 years ago. Oh. Right? And I was only in the 8th or 9th grade. So it was really, it became, I got disconnected. If it hadn't been for sports, I probably would have completely disconnected.
Yeah.
But it did get me mixed up with some folks I didn't need to be involved in. And that led to me right out of high school. I said, you know what? I'm out of here. I joined the military for 6 years myself. And I went back to Germany and literally was stationed about 60 miles away from where I had just been as a kid two, 3 years prior, which was awesome.
Yeah.
I get out of the service and I go back to Southern California and have a new skill set. I start my little entrepreneurial journey. And I was doing computer programming. This is when the dot-com boom was just blowing up. Mm. People were getting PCs on their desks. You know, it's becoming a part of business. I'm dating myself, right? But that's, it's easy to see with the beard.
Wait a second. Was that in the 90s? Are you talking about in the
90s? Yeah, it would have been the late 80s, early 90s.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. I'm there with you then. Okay. Got you.
So, you know, I was doing computer programming for a little consulting company, my little consulting company. And I landed this really cool project. And it was like the first real money as, you know, as a 20-some-year-old. I was like, man, I'm rolling it.
Right?
I just wanted to throw it on the bed and roll on it. Like,
oh,
I
know that feeling. Yes.
Exactly. Right. But I'm out celebrating with a couple of buddies of mine and we're talking about the project. And it's, I underbid it and overestimated, you know, it's like, okay, I probably needed to take 160 hours worth of real solid computer programming time. And I told them I could do it in 80. And I was like, oh, how am I going to get this done now that I landed the project?
Yeah.
And a friend of mine said, well, you should try some of this. And he introduced me to speed. So here we are, early 90s. If anyone has seen the movie Blow, we're right along that same timeline with Johnny Depp, right? Everything's blown up. It's available everywhere. And I'm not condoning it, right? But I did get sucked in. I got sucked into that world to the point where I just let my business go aside because of my ability to connect with people. And, through that connection, you learn to read them really fast. I was probably a little too good at that particular game. And it got to the point, and I'm going to condense this a little bit for you. A couple of years later, the police were literally kicking the door open to my condo.
Oh, that's scary.
Yeah. The only good thing about that is, well, there's two good things. One is I wasn't there when it happened.
Oh, that's always good, I guess.
I went on probably a 4-day party binge the Thursday before it happened on a Sunday. The Thursday before, a friend of mine, we went to the gun range and we shot some guns. And then I just started going out, making my rounds. I did a lot of pool hustling, playing shooting pool at local bars and whatnot.
Yeah.
And that helped me be in the right places, to do the things I was doing, the illicit things. And so Sunday morning, I'm coming back, I've been awake for 4 days at this point. No joke.
Ooh, I know that feeling too, Tracy.
Yeah, it's no fun, right? Mm-mm. And I get to my condo and I could see the door was ajar. And I thought I'd been robbed. In that circle, it wouldn't have been unusual, right? Have something stolen, someone breaks in your house, whatever. Come to find out, the police had raided my place just hours before. They had kicked the door open probably 1 a.m., 2 a.m. in the morning. Oh. And it was just like you see in the movies, furniture's tossed over, clothes are everywhere. There was Fruity Pebbles and Instant Potatoes dumped out on the counter when they were looking for stuff. Well, fortunately, I was wise enough not to have those things around where they could say, all right, we found it in your home. You're guilty, right? And but what did happen is while I was starting to clean things up, two detectives knock on my door. Are you who you say you are? Are you Tracy Rittman? Blah, 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 blah. And I just come on in here, right? Do you have any ID? Now I'm going to pause here for a moment. And you remember the beginning of this part of the story, I was the first thing I did on my 4-day binge is I went to the firing range with a friend. Right. So as we were leaving the firing range, I asked him, hey, I'm probably going to come back here tomorrow or Saturday and shoot some more. He's like, well, I can't make it. Well, I didn't have any guns that were my own. So I asked if I could hold on to his and I would return him to him after I got done with the range. So those weapons were in a briefcase that I did everything out of. Also, my wallet was in that same briefcase. So let's go back forward to Sunday morning.
Oh, no.
As the detectives asked for my ID. I said, sure, it's right over here in my briefcase. I wasn't thinking about Thursday's activities. Right. I popped open the briefcase to reach in and grab my wallet. I lifted it as little as possible. That didn't matter. These guys are trained. They know what to look for. They saw the weapons in there. One who was standing behind me yelled gun to his partner, quickly tackled me onto the couch. And don't get me wrong. No. If I was him in the same scenario, I'd have done the same thing, right? He had every right. He saw weapons. I was going reaching in there. Who knows what could have happened? So they take me down to the police station, and you know, they let me sit in a cell for probably a couple hours, and then they finally take me into an interrogation room again, much like you see in the movies. A guy comes in there, sits across the table from me, and starts asking questions. Here's the scary thing. They were asking all the right questions. They had all the right names. And I'm like, I don't know that person. Oh. I don't know what you're talking about. They didn't have any direct links between these people they were asking about and me, which was the saving grace. So once they finally released me and I'm walking home, you know, I'm talking to the power I believe in, going, oh my God, thank you so much for not letting me be there when it happened. I had a 3-month-old baby daughter who was over at a friend's house because I knew I was going to be out partying. So I wanted her cared for and the whole 9 yards. Yeah. So I'm walking home, and the one voice I heard ringing in my head was my father's. And my father always said, family first. You know, to the point, in a couple of times in his military career, someone was messing with my mom or me. He had no qualms getting in trouble to protect us, right? So was the voice that kept ringing in my head. So when I finally got back to my condo, I called my mom and dad up. I said, I need to talk. I need some help. And thank goodness my parents were the people they are. I'll never be able to thank the Lord or whatever power you happen to believe in both my parents. And I call him my brother from another mother. It was a gentleman I had known since I was 15 and he was like 13. And we were friends to the day he died, probably about 6 years ago. You know, it was just, we were brothers like that, but we came from different parents. So between the three of them, I got cleaned up, got my act back together. And that started for me a corporate career. However, it didn't just happen overnight, right? You can't go, for me, I don't think you can go through something like that and just like step right back out there. And if you can, man, more power to you. But for,
so you got arrested. But did you have to go to court? Like, did you go to jail at all for that? Or were you?
They took me downtown just for questioning, right? Oh, they knew I was involved somehow, but they weren't quite sure how. And the way what had happened was the young lady who was the mother of my child, we were living together in the condo at the time. We were not married. Someone had ratted her out for some sales activities. Mm. So they didn't know. Like I said, they couldn't make those connections. They didn't know where my involvement in it was, which was lucky enough for me, right? And whoever ratted her out didn't mention my name directly as a party in what it was he was ratting her out for. So, you know, it, like I said, it was a pure fluke of luck, and I took it and I got out. And so many of the folks that, you know, I associated with back then did not. And, you know, some of them passed away and as a result of their dealings and the drug scene itself, others went to jail, you know, went to prison. I know a few of them that went to prison. Yeah. One reached out to me just a year and a half ago, right before the COVID adventure started. And him and I were best buds, and he stayed in for a long time and actually went to prison for a couple of years, got out. And then that's when he got clean after that. So yeah, I bless the Lord for, you know, my parents and my brother Robbie for being there when I needed them. I mean, that's huge.
That is huge. A lot of people don't have that. That's amazing.
And, you know, and if you're going through something like this now or just gone through it and there's someone you can talk to, man, get out there, make that phone call, send that text, send that email. Dude, I need to talk. Because if it hadn't been for Robbie, I know for a fact I would have continued down that dark path. It would have happened. Yeah. I had no light to walk towards. And I just felt it was my only way at that point. I was so into the scene that, I could not see a way out until that happened. It's like, holy crap. you know what I'm saying?
Oh, I know. Yeah. So when you were in active addiction, were you Would you say, were you more addicted to the drugs themselves, or was it the lifestyle
you were living? I want to say it was the lifestyle, but let's be honest, the drugs have a way to get their hooks into you deep, right? There's a certain feeling that comes with any drug, which is usually why you take it in the first place. But for me, it started off as a way to, like I said, get that computer programming done, which I did get done, by the way. But
Sure, you did.
You know, you're like, oh God, if I go to sleep, I'm going to miss something. And you feel like there's all these creative energies flowing, and you're probably talking in gibberish and saying stupid shit about the universe. Oh, sorry. I'm not sure if the language limitations you might have.
You can swear. No, but you're good.
You know what I'm saying? Because there's one point I remember sitting down having a conversation about the universe and how it works. And we were talking about planets. And as I think about that conversation now, I'm like, dude, how high was I? Even
doesn't make any fucking sense
whatsoever, you know. So, but that brings me back around to the point where, okay, so I'm out and I still have these amazing skills where I could have just walked right out, probably landed a pretty decent job. But because I had taken this kick to the head, you know, emotionally and psychologically, and you know, probably from a personality standpoint, I didn't feel worthy. You know, I've been slinging cane for a couple of years. It's like, can you imagine I'm going to go into an interview and I see one of my old customers? Oh, wait a minute. I'm not sure we want to hire you. started actually working I just started doing warehouse jobs. I got a job on the dock at the, you know, that swing shift where you'd go there at midnight and you'd come home at 6 a.m.
Oh, that's the worst.
Just to start feeling good about myself, just to be a productive member of society. And I did that probably about, 8 months, maybe about a year, where I start feeling like, okay, I feel like I can step back out there. And I stepped back out there and was lucky enough to land a really good role at the Coca-Cola company. And that started my corporate career up the ladder, you know, doing all the right things, meeting all the right people, making all the right, you know, moves as a young adult with a child, right? At the same time.
Yeah.
And so, you know, I always say there's been three in the roller coaster of my life, there's been three dips. Dip number one, obviously, was, you know, getting into that scene and having that my door kicked in. The door kicked in was a blessing. Dip number two came shortly after I started working for Coca-Cola, and I was now married to another woman, all out doing all the, like I said, doing all the right thing. You know, I had the American dream. I had the home, the car, the first daughter, and another one on the way. And she was still out in California. My job took me out to Atlanta, the headquarters for Coca-Cola. And so in that interim, I was looking for a home and had just found one. We were getting ready to move in. 2 weeks from the day I'm about to mention, she was scheduled to come out, you know, and move into our new home. She goes into labor 2 weeks early. Not unusual, right? The scary thing was, as you know, hey, you just want to, you get the phone call at work. Hey, you know, your wife's going into labor. Okay, cool. I start making the arrangements to hop on a plane. Then a little while later, I get the phone call. She's just been taken into emergency surgery. They lost the heartbeat of the baby.
Oh, all right. No.
Well, now, you know, my boss was an amazing guy. He had this amazing Corvette. So he throws me into his car and literally probably breaks every land speed record on the planet to get me down to the airport to rush me on. Long story short, my daughter was born with what's called distended bowel syndrome. One of the blood vessels feeding her intestinal tract during growth didn't fully develop. So she was born with probably, I think it was about 32 centimeters of intestine, where normally you would have 300 plus, right?
She didn't have
enough intestinal tract to sustain life. In the first 3 months of her life, she went through six different operations to do a combination of things to save her life and potentially even give her an opportunity to have enough intestines. So like one of the operations was they took her intestine apart like a jigsaw puzzle and put it back together, you know, in smaller tubes, you know, to give her more track, right? Give her 70, 80 centimeters. Right. Yeah. Still wasn't enough. Another one was to install what's called a TPN line, a total parental nutrition line, right in, I mean, right into the artery that feeds into her heart. Which is good and bad. The good part is because she couldn't eat orally to sustain life, it was giving her what she needed. The bad part was, well, her body's going, and the body's an amazing tool, right? The body's going, oh, well, you don't need this kidney because you don't need to filter anything because it was just raw nutrition going in. So now she needs a liver and small bowel transplant. Okay.
Oh my gosh.
So this is all happening in a very tight time frame. And so they finally get her all stabilized and ready to go. They get her on the organ donor list. They give you this instruction sheet to, you know, have a bag ready, the whole nine yards. Because when your beeper goes off, all you need to do is grab your bag, grab your baby, get in the car, get to the hospital. Yeah. And then after that, it's a waiting game. That's it. You're just waiting for someone to die. There's really no other way to say it. That beeper went off one time. And I did like my boss did, and I broke every land speed record, right? The bag in the trunk, right? And I had a Camaro Z28 at the time. So it was really easy.
Nice. There you go.
We get all the way down to the hospital, and we're ready to go. We're excited. You know, she's probably 8 months old at this point. And we're excited, but you know, you're kind of sad at the same time. You know, the doctor or the nurse, I can't remember whichever it was, came over and said, you know, unfortunately, the organs that we thought were going to be available were unharvestable. What had happened was a young boy had been beaten by his parent. I don't know whether it was the mother or the father, and died as a result of that. They were going to give the organs up to save someone else's life. But he had been hurt so bad as a result of this event, right? I don't want to say beating, but that's what it was, that they couldn't use the organs, right? So you're and me as a father, right? How could you do that to your child? Anyway, that's a whole nother podcast episode right there. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, definitely.
So after that, the doctor said, you know, the best place for this particular operation is up in Pittsburgh. You'd really be best served child could be up there. So mom and baby goes up to Pittsburgh. They're living out of a Ronald McDonald House, which was like a block away from the hospital, and me and my older daughter were flying up there every weekend or so. And check me on and you reel me in for time. I know you don't have a limited amount.
Okay. You're good. No, I want to hear the story.
here's downfall number two, right? Because everything really is looking okay. About 2 months in, maybe more, because she was up there for a while and she passed away at 18 months old. About 8 months into this adventure, right, I fly up there and she has this big hematoma on her head. You know, it was banana shaped and it really took up almost her whole skull. They used to call them candy stripers, one of the aides. I don't know what they're calling them nowadays, but that's what I remember them as. And, you know, obviously I'm older, but was holding the baby and something happened. She's like looking one way and the baby sees something and goes to reach for it, loses her balance, falls out of her hands and straight onto her head.
If
it had been any normal child, it probably wouldn't have been okay, right? Right, no one wants to drop the baby at all, but because her body was in such a weakened state fighting off what was going on inside of her already, now all the resources are going to heal this hematoma and all the damage that was going on in her skull. Her health really took a really fast downhill slide. And so whereas where I was going with the flight up there, I walked into her room and, you know, she was She was always bright and bubbly, always checking things out. I could always make her laugh. Today, it wasn't happening. Nothing I could do would make her even crack a smile, which made me ask the doctor when he was on his rounds. I said, I need to know something. If the organs were available, like right now, do you think she could survive the operation? And I got a bunch of hemming and hawing and a bunch of doctor speak. And this is no joke. Literally, grabbed that classic white coat, drug him across the hall into a janitor's room, right? Closed the door. I said, look, mano a mano, it's just you and me. No administrators, no insurance companies, none of that. And re-asked the question. And finally got the answer. He didn't think she would. He said, right now, the way she is right now, didn't think she would survive the operation. Not the answer I wanted, but it was a response at least. So now I got a new baseline. I said, okay, so do you think her health would improve to the point where she could survive the operation? Now, mind you, before I tell you the answer, she's sitting in that room on a respirator, right? That's what's allowing her to breathe right now. That's what's keeping her alive at this point. Her health had deteriorated to that point. And so, I asked that question. Do you think her health would improve to the point where she could survive the operation? A little more hemming and hawing, a little less though. Finally said, no, I don't think so. So the only thing keeping her alive is that respirator. Yeah. So you're at that point now where you have to make this choice. And you don't have to make it. The choice could be leave her on there and hope and pray. And God, if that's your decision, I love you for it. It's not a decision I would wish upon my worst enemy. I've never hated someone so much where I wanted them to face this. But I felt if I was going to keep her here on that respirator, it would have been for me. It would have been selfish. And that was one of the lessons I had learned from my drug days. That was all about me having fun, enjoying doing all the things I wanted to do, not a care for anyone else. That was my selfish days. And I didn't want to be that selfish anymore. And so it was, do I keep her here in pain to make me happy, or do I let her go? And so we made this. Yeah, that's what I'm saying. It's not a decision you want anyone to have to make, right? So we made that decision to take the respirator off, wrapped her in her favorite blanket. This is no joke. I literally sat down in a rocking chair that was in her room and I rocked her to sleep one last time. And it's a blessing and a curse, right? I'm getting wispy-eyed, sorry.
I'm sorry. I was about to cry.
I totally get it. It was a blessing and a curse. Obviously, the curse is obvious. You're losing a child, right? A pain. But the blessing was I got to be there at that last moment and tell her all the reasons why I was thankful she had been here. She had shown me how to look at life through different eyes. Like I said, she was always checking out new things. And, it was always amazing. And knowing she full well, she was never feeling great. Probably had pains that she thought was regular for anyone's life.
Yeah.
She still soldiered on. She had this thing where whenever she saw something new teddy bear, new piece of food she had never seen before, she would do what we called the ET. Remember ET? Elliot, finger. Yeah. That's what she would do. She would put her finger out and touch it. Once she touched it and figured out it was safe, it was in her mouth. It's like any other baby's in her mouth. She's playing with
aww.
It. So it was this whole seeing through new eyes. We've all heard the phrase, right? So I was lucky enough to thank her for all these amazing lessons and that I was going to live my life to honor those lessons, right? And so after her passing, I threw myself into my work and personal development, everyone's like, oh, personal development. Well, you know what? If you just go to the seminars and get all pumped up and do a couple of things, that's cool. But if you really throw yourself into it and take the actions and make it a part of who you are, it can totally change your life, right? If you want it to.
Oh,
I mean, for me, right. I was every Tony Robbins, Brian Tracy, Zig Ziglar thing that came through town, I was there. And if I had the opportunity to have lunch with them, I was there too. And and then taking that information and turning it into action, I saw 5 promotions in 3 years during this time.
Wow.
Right? So that was the good side of it, right? I was like honoring what I had said. However, while I was going, you know, I'll say this way, my partner at the time was staying on the same path. So we were literally, as a result, growing apart. And it was became a bit of a tumultuous relationship, is probably about the most respectful way I could say it. This is my opinion, and I know I am not void of responsibility. It's take two people to make a relationship. But
right, exactly.
She was losing her control over the relationship, right? The person she had married was different than the person she was currently married to. I was becoming more, all right, I need to do things a different way, right? Because I was learning better ways to go through life. Her and I had met while we were back in the drug scene. So we had a different mindset of things. We were no longer in that scene, but we still had some of those mindsets going on. I was freeing myself of those. She was not, right? Again, no drugs were involved, but it's like if you take a criminal and you take them out of their criminal behaviors, of robbing and stealing, there's still that tendency inside there. So they're going to use those tendencies to do different things, maybe manipulate people.
Oh, yeah.
Maybe whatever it is, right? And I was pulling away from that. I was like, oh, I see a far better way to live my life than, you know, finding every angle of things, right? I don't need to do this or do that to earn money. I'm doing very well by earning it the good old fashioned way, right? And so again, this voice of my father was family first, family first. I stayed together trying to make things work until my youngest started. We had one daughter after Krista had passed away, left high school, graduated high school. And once she graduated high school, it was I don't think this is going to work. And she's like, yeah, I don't think it's going to either. We won.
Wait, you stayed with her for what, like 18 years 20 after?
Yeah.
Oh my gosh. Now through this experience of losing your daughter, every time I've listened to your story, because I listened to it a couple of times, like it really like brings tears to my eyes. I couldn't imagine going through that. And I, you know, for you to not go back to using after something so traumatic speaks volumes, because you wanted to live in her honor and you held that and you didn't. So how were you able, though, to not slip back into your old ways? Was it just for that simple reason that you told your daughter you were going to, you know, live in her honor?
It was probably threefold. First off was the fact I still had my first daughter, right? Remember when the door got kicked in, I had a 3-month-old daughter. And so with all this stuff was going on with Krista, my second daughter, you know, I still had my oldest daughter looking up at me, Daddy, is everything going to be okay? And you're still trying to be that rock for them, right? That strong for me, strong dad, a strong parent. To guide them through. And that was probably the biggest thing for me. And then obviously, you know, my commitment to Krista, I'm going to live to honor you. I mean, I know I slipped, I'm human, right? I slipped in there, never slipped back into the drug scene. But the third thing I think was the very first step I ever took when everything happened way back when is I completely cut all ties from all the people I was associated with back in those days. So I burned the boats, right? I got to my island of sobriety. I burnt that boat and it was gone. If you were associated with me, I tried to keep two relationships. One was with the mother of my first daughter, who she was the one that was ratted out. And she slipped back into the scene. I'm like, that's it. And I took her to court and got full custody. And boom, that was it from there. I cut that relationship off. And then the one other one I tried to maintain for a little while was the gentleman I mentioned who, you know, stayed in for a bit and then went to prison.
Oh, right.
Other than that, I cut all the other ties away. So I think that burned the boats, you know, the fact that I was looking at my first daughter saying, man, I don't want you to have to go through that. And then making that commitment was that triad that kept me from falling back. But, and this is going to sound almost kind of woo-woo, but I think what really kind of did it for me, and it kind of held the glue of these, the three things I just mentioned, was taking the time. When I threw myself into my personal development, was taking the time to turn around and look back into the abyss of the mistakes I had made. I'm a firm believer that life has lessons to teach us. No matter where you are, you could be Jesus Christ today. There's still a lesson you need to learn tomorrow. And life will keep throwing that same bloody lesson in front of you until you learn it.
So I paused
yes. during my personal development journey, and I purposefully, and it wasn't easy. I did the whole Michael Jackson man in the mirror thing. And I turned around and said, okay, I did some stupid shit. I fucked up my life big time. Why? What were the reasons? What choices did I make? And where could have I turned it earlier? So that when I was started going forward in my new life, it's like, okay, here's one of those choices. If I go this way, I know what's there. If I go this way, right, I don't know what's there, but I know it's not that. You know what I'm saying?
Right. Yeah. Yeah, for sure. Yeah, that's so true. You know, like for me too, like I lived most of my life up until 3 years ago, like just living in this like cycle of like, it was like the same shit would just keep happening. And I'd be like, well, here I am. Just this is my life. I'm just meant to be miserable. But it wasn't until you hit that, you know, I hit my final rock bottom and I was like, you know what? Like, fuck this. I'm not going to live like this. I'm not going to end my life because I know there's more out there and I have to live for my kids and I have to make my marriage work, like all these things. And like how you said too about cutting all ties, I had to do that too. So, you know, you have to. What they say, I say this all the time, like you become the people you spend the most time with. So if you're spending all of your time with addicts, people who don't have a lot of money or anything or have no purpose or drive in life, you will be sucked down into that whether you realize it or not, you know, and that's what was happening to me. And then when I let go of all those so-called friends, I was like, oh, wait, there is more to life than being 100%. Miserable.
Well, you know? I think the perfect analogy to what you just said is, if you get fired or you lose your job, do you go to the want ads, or nowadays it's, you know, monster.com or, you know, LinkedIn leads,
right?
Or do you go down to the bar and commiserate with all the other people that lost their jobs? Right? Because if you're down in there at the bar and you're belly aching about you lost your job at the factory or at the office or the hospital or whatever it was you lost your job, along with all the other folks that lost your job, guess what? You're not getting any further along. However, if you're like, okay, enough of this. I have your wallow moment. You have every right to feel your feelings, let them out, go through the process. Now, suck it up, raise your shoulders, and start going. Where am I going to find my next job? What am I going to do next? And if they keep going back to the bar and pissing and moaning, fine, let them go do that. That's not what you're meant for.
Yeah. And you are in control of the choices that you make. That's another thing that took me a while to realize. Like, oh, wait, you mean I don't have to go along with the crowd? I don't have to listen to what society is telling me I should be doing? No, you are in full control of the choices you make.
That is the hugest, toughest lesson anyone will ever make. And here, and I think inside that control, it's not only do you have the control, but it's your fucking responsibility to own that control, right? It wasn't until I said, you know what? I'm fucking up my life. I have a new daughter. I am not going this direction. I call my mom and dad, right? You know what? My daughter's really sick. Am I going to keep her around here for me? or I'm going to let her go and remember all the good things, right? You know what? I'm in a suck-ass relationship. I deserve better. I'm worthy of better, right? And until you take that ownership and that responsibility and say, you know what? This isn't working. If you can't treat me like X, Y, and Z, I'm out. That's it. And then you start looking for the person that will treat you the way you deserve, though you want to be treated, right?
Yeah, exactly. That's true. Yeah, because once you, for me, like it was letting go of all these toxic relationships, I had to stop seeing it from the victim perspective. Like, oh, like why did he choose me? No, no, no. I chose him. I chose that relationship because guess what? How many opportunities did I have to leave, but yet I stayed because I thought I could fix him. Fuck that. Yeah. You're not put here to fix anybody. Right. And you don't even have they have to want to fix it themselves. Yeah. Like that's not your responsibility.
If they want your
that
help,
was hard for me
to
realize
too. If they want
your
help, hey, help them out. But they've got to do the work, just like you've got to do your own work.
Yep, exactly. Exactly. So, Tracy, I could keep talking to you forever, but I wanted to know, what are you doing now?
Well, these days, I'm blessed with all my girls are grown up and doing successful things. My youngest just joined Liberty University.
nice.
And starting her collegiate career there. I'm out. I'm getting involved. I think when I say getting involved, I'm getting involved in helping, and whether it's helping a little business, a little local business with their marketing, which is one of the things I do, or getting on the microphone on my own podcast and sharing some tips so they can help themselves. That's what I do. And then I think the next thing after that is getting involved in what's going on in the political arena locally, right? Are the right people running my city? Are the right people running my county? And if I don't think the right people are doing it, raising my hand, making a phone call, sending an email, and share, I'm their constituent. They're supposed to be serving me and sharing my opinion.
Right.
Right. And if I don't think they're reacting to that opinion correctly, then finding someone that will run for that office or even raising my hand and doing it myself to get the right people. And I'm not even talking about whether you, what side of the aisle you may believe in. I'm just talking about the right person, right? So it just comes back to that responsibility. I think one of the things we as Americans have done is sat back, I checked, I voted for the R or the D because that's how I believe. And then, that's their job to go do that. Oh, no. It's your job to make sure they do it. Remember, how does it start? We the people. So anyway, that's a whole nother podcast. Too,
oh my
right?
goodness. Yeah. I should hook you up with my husband to talk about that. Cause that stuff's up his alley. That's not my forte, but I get what you're saying all the same.
But I think it all comes back to the same thing. It's taking ownership and responsibility in your life. And that is a part of your life. The people that are setting your laws and running your counties. And I know I'm talking about the president. I'm just talking about what's happening locally. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, for sure. And I think, like a lot of times I think that part gets ignored. I know for me, like I think about president, I don't really think about the local, but what's going on locally. And I think that, my husband does, he went and voted at the preliminaries or whatever they're called. I didn't, and now, but I feel like that's something that needs to be talked about more. We need to be more open about what goes on because you're right. Like it is up to us to make those choices,
100%.
So, So where can people find you, Tracy, if they want to connect with you?
Probably the easiest place is the website, which is darkhorseschooling.com. They can check out the podcast, which is the Dark Horse Entrepreneur. We're on all the platforms, probably just like you are. So if they put in Dark Horse Entrepreneur, Dark Horse Schooling, they'll find me. All the socials are up there. You'll find me doing lives on Facebook. And, I'm a little bit everywhere.
Awesome. Well, Tracy, my last question for you is, what is your number one tip for our listeners to allow the good things into their lives?
I think the number one tip, and it was a pivotal point for me, and I hear, and we've all heard this saying before, know your why, let's take that one step back and know who you are, right? Because I don't care why you're doing it. If why you're doing it opposes who you are, you're never going to get it done. So you're going to have to take that man in the mirror moment and just look at yourself and say, well, who the hell is Tracy? Who the hell is Amanda? And then if you don't like that, who do you want to be? So now that you can go from, okay, this is what I am today, and this is where I want to get to, what do I have to do to get there? Okay, do I need to learn speaking? Do I need to learn skills? Do I have to start treating people better, whatever it might be? Or maybe you look at that and you say, you know what? I'm pretty aligned already. I'm pretty damn good, right? So it's the big tip for me is knowing who you are. That way, when you start answering those questions of why you're doing things, you can check to see if they're in alignment. And if they're not, maybe you shouldn't be doing them.
Love that. So true. Thank you so much, Tracy, for sharing your story and having this open conversation with me and giving our listeners such a wonderful tip to allow good things into their lives. I really
My
like
pleasure.
That
thank
one.
You. Thank Again, you thank much. You for having me aboard.
Yeah, sure. And for everyone listening, remember, you are stronger than you think, and you can have the life you imagine, regardless of your past. Make sure to hit that follow or subscribe button so you don't miss an episode of the show, and I will talk to you all soon.